Hey, Leading Learning listener, if you represent a membership organization looking for ways to expand your online course catalog rapidly with high-quality content, we have good news.
At leadinglearning.com/AMA, you can find out how to make online training from the American Management Association available to your learners.
Through a partnership between AMA and Tagoras, the parent company of Leading Learning, you can give your learners access to more than 70 e-learning modules covering essential business topics ranging from leading and innovating to managing projects effectively to working in hybrid teams.
For details on how to grow your catalog with courses from a true global leader in management training, visit leadinglearning.com/AMA.
If you're a leader or an aspiring leader in the business of lifelong learning, you're in the right place. I'm Salisa Steele.
And I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast.
Welcome to episode 70 of the Leading Learning Podcast. This time around, Jeff and I are going to discuss what we see as the mainstreaming of lifelong learning, and we're going to reference in particular a special report that came out recently in The Economist. We have a couple of quick notes to start, though, and we're going to want to highlight a resource that we think you might find valuable. First up, we want to be sure to thank Your Membership, the sponsor for the podcast in the first quarter of 2017. Your Membership's learning management system is specifically designed for professional education with a highly flexible and intuitive system that customizes the learning experience. Your Membership's LMS seamlessly integrates with key systems to manage all of your educational content formats in one central location while providing powerful tools to create and deliver assessments, evaluations, and learning communities. Support your learning strategy across all devices and platforms, deliver to a global audience, and empower your organization to be the key education voice for your industry with Your Membership. You can find out more at yourmembership.com. Next, we encourage you to ask yourself, am I a serious learning business professional committed to investing in my own professional growth and improvement? If the answer to that question is yes, then there's no way you're going to want to miss out on Learning Technology Design, our upcoming virtual conference created specifically for professionals in the business of continuing education and professional development. The event will take place March 1st through 3rd, and access will continue through May, and you can get all of the details at ltd.leadinglearning.com. We really hope you and others at your organization will consider joining us. Now, one last item before we start talking about the mainstreaming of lifelong learning, and that's our resource for this episode. Jeff, what do we have this time around?
Well, actually, the resource relates very directly to this episode of the podcast, and specifically, it's a free download of the first chapter of Leading the Learning Revolution, which is my book that came out a few years ago. And Leading the Learning Revolution is really a pretty how-to sort of book, a lot of very practical type knowledge in it, but it starts off in the first chapter really just trying to set the overall landscape and highlighting the major shifts that are driving a renaissance in lifelong learning and by extension, the market for lifelong learning. So we thought that being able to have access to that might be helpful to go along with some of the other resources that we're going to talk about in this episode. And you could get that resource simply by going to the show notes for this episode at leadinglearning.com/episode70, or you can go more directly by going to leadinglearning.com/revolution. Now, one of the things that we've been seeing is that increasingly lifelong learning is showing up in the major media. A number of new resources have been created relative to it. I've noticed, you know, recently that, for example, in the Harvard Business Review, there have been at least three or four different posts about lifelong learning in the last few months, and that never really used to occur. But more recently, as you referenced at the beginning of the podcast, Lisa, The Economist, you know, that venerable old British institution, came out with a special report on lifelong learning and really declared it an economic imperative at this point. And, you know, in other words, it's time to really start taking lifelong learning seriously as part of the economy from their standpoint, but just, you know, as part of life in general. And, you know, certainly for us, and I think for most of our listeners, this isn't necessarily news. We've believed this for a long time, but it's nice to, you know, have an institution like The Economist declare that lifelong learning is now so important. And we've seen other evidence that that lifelong learning really is just going mainstream at this point.
All right. Well, we dedicated an earlier podcast to the Pew report around lifelong learning and technology. So another example there, really looking at, you know, mainstream across the culture in the United States, you know, how are adults thinking about lifelong learning and the impact that technology is having on it. So that's just, you know, one, again, relatively recent example of a group that you don't necessarily associate directly with learning focusing on lifelong learning.
And I know it was north of 70% of people identified as lifelong learners in that report, and there's a, you know, a lot of other great data in it. We'll also make sure we link to that from this episode. That's a free download that you can access. Obviously, you can access the Economist report as well, and it read at least up to a certain point before they're going to, you know, try to get you to subscribe, and we recommend at least reading that far and potentially even subscribing for the sake of this particular report. And then, of course, you will have the download to the first chapter of Leading the Learning Revolution. But yeah, in general, I mean, if you're in this business of lifelong learning, in the market for continuing education and professional development, you know, good news. You know, everybody's paying attention now. It's top of mind, and I think we're going to see more and more of that.
Well, one of the things I really appreciated about the Economist report is that I feel like they gave good weight to the complexity of the issue here. And, you know, they start by kind of laying out the landscape. And again, as you've said, Jeff, this is something that we've talked about a lot, the role that technology, the impact that technology is having on how we live, and therefore how we work, and therefore how we learn. But I think sometimes it can get simplified. It can sort of be this, okay, well, technology is resulting in automation, and so we're losing jobs.
Right. But of course, it goes much deeper than that. We're certainly losing some jobs, but new jobs are coming along. And maybe most importantly, just the nature of all jobs seems to be changing at this point, you know. And I think the argument has been, and The Economist highlights, as you said, they don't, you know, treat this as a simple issue. It's not just, you know, I'll go get more education so I'll be able to be employed in this new market. I'll kind of, you know, stay ahead of the curve. You can't really stay ahead of the curve. You have to kind of bend with the curve in a way. And they point out some interesting facts that, that yes, you know, it's still valuable to have the formal education. It's still valuable to get the college degree. That's probably not going away anytime soon. But at the same time, wages have been flattening out for higher educated workers. So you can get the job, but the job may not pay as well. Of course, at the same time, for more low educated workers, the jobs could be disappearing. You know, so there's that end of the equation. And a lot of times, those higher educated workers are actually moving into roles that used to be populated by the lower educated workers. So, you know, they're coming into work that's, you know, less cognitively demanding, potentially less satisfying. And, you know, the only way to kind of, as I said, sort of bend with the curve at this point is certainly to have the education, but oftentimes, you know, you have to have a combination of skills. They point out that technology is making that more and more necessary.
Yeah, they mentioned this term hybrid jobs, which actually comes from Burning Glass Technologies. It's a Boston-based startup. But I think that was a really interesting point, that jobs are becoming much more complex, you know, that whereas traditionally a job role might have looked for skills in, you know, competency A, now it's becoming this blend, you know, it's A plus B plus C. And so you are coming up with these kind of hybrid jobs where you're, and I think we see this all the time where we talk to associations and they're looking for somebody who can, you know, manage their learning management system, who can help with the marketing of the education products, who can maybe actually do a little bit of material creation. And so that's, you're really a blending there. That is a hybrid job.
Yeah, definitely. And they make the point that, you know, vocational training is still valuable. And, you know, there's been a lot of call, I think, in recent years for maybe let's focus more on vocational training. Let's, you know, go to the community colleges. Let's get people these hard skills in some of the complex emerging technical areas that are going to keep them employable. But as they point out, you know, those vocational skills, they'll just get you to the table. But then it just keeps changing from that point forward. Whether you're in more of a skill-based or a knowledge-based job, you're going to have to keep learning. I mean, that's the bottom line, and that's really what's driving the need for lifelong learning, this idea that it's an economic imperative. And, you know, it's obviously creating challenges, but it's creating a lot of opportunity at the same time. Now, you know, they also point out that because they are really concerned with this from an economic perspective and the job market and how that's changing, that, you know, you would think there would be a role for employers to play in this. But to go back to your, you know, highlighting the complexity around technology, Salisa, you know, this employer-employee relationship around learning, I think, is becoming more complex as well. You know, and on the one hand, employers really aren't investing more in training. I mean, I'm sure you can get different figures on that, and some groups would say, oh, it really is happening, at least in certain areas. But in general, you know, you can't necessarily count on an employer to continually give you all the skills you need to keep moving along in your job. And of course, if you're working for a smaller employer, which, you know, most people are, you know, you may not have that much formal training in the first place. We've pointed that out before. You know, your average small business doesn't have an HR and training department that's, you know, got a formal program for people. So you can't necessarily count on employers to provide the education and training, but that doesn't mean that they're not expecting that education and training and learning to actually happen.
Well, and so then it seems like a lot of the burden falls on the individual, on the employee, to then sort of take on the responsibility. And that's something we've talked about before, learner responsibility, and something we're fans of. And so that learner has to say, okay, what is it that I need to know that I don't know now? And then how do I learn that so that I can remain relevant, competent, and even, you know, excel and grow in my career and in my job.
Now, of course, where employers, you know, are coming into play with respect to that is they're trying to identify employees who are capable of doing that. So I think, you know, this could change the hiring process quite a bit, you know, from the perspective of a job candidate coming in and from the perspective of, you know, whoever's interviewing and vetting that job candidate. You know, the job candidate increasingly is going to want to be able to demonstrate that, you know, he or she is a lifelong learner, that they are motivated, they are self-starting, you know, they can roll and adapt with the changes that are going to occur. And employers, you know, are going to get a lot more skilled at figuring out who those people are, you know, based on their track record, based on how they respond in interview situations and that sort of thing. They're going to be looking for those types of employees, and not just at the big, you know, tech companies. I mean, I think The Economist refers to Microsoft and Google and some of those places that are actively doing this as part of their hiring and recruiting process. But it's going to apply, you know, at all levels of employment going forward. And increasingly, you know, employers are going to be looking at not necessarily directed training and specific skills. I mean, that'll still go on, but they're going to be looking more at those sort of meta skills. Can we actually teach people how to be better learners so that, you know, if they come in with some good capacity for learning and you know, personal motivation and growth, can we as employers capitalize on that and help them to do that more? And obviously that's going to, you know, redound to employers' benefits if they're able to do that. But this whole dynamic between, you know, employers and employees and how they're going to have to work together or work at odds in some cases at this whole question of lifelong learning going forward. Very, very interesting question.
Well, and one thing that I know struck us both as we were thinking about the Economist report as well is kind of what we might call the philosophical implications of it and certainly some social implications of it. I mean, as you noted, I mean, The Economist, as you know, as the publication's title says right there, it makes sense that they should focus on learning from this earning standpoint, and that's how they you know, name the report. But I know I believe, and maybe this is just the outgrowth of being a liberal arts, you know, graduate, but, you know, I definitely believe that learning is not just about earning. I mean,
right,
definitely can help in terms of finding a career and a pathway to making a living, but, you know, really learning is much bigger. I mean, you know, I know that I love to learn things that don't necessarily help me you know, in terms of dollars coming home, but that I'm still interested in. And so that sort of bigger picture, that interest that and curiosity that people bring to learning, and all of that is tied in here. And there's also, and this is really kind of the social issue that would go along with that philosophical issue, is, and The Economist does make this point, that we have an issue right now of kind of the rich getting richer, because the as we were just saying, if the onus and the burden of kind of the learning is really following on that individual employee at this point, well, it tends to be the employees who already are relatively well educated, who already are earning at a relatively high level. They're the ones who sort of have the wherewithal to go figure out what it is they need to learn, how to learn it. They have maybe more flexible schedules and a little bit extra money that they can earmark for training and for learning than do those less skilled, lower paying jobs. And
yeah, and we've cited research before, for example, with respect to massive open online courses, MOOCs, you know, which a lot of people saw as sort of the democratization of education. Everybody can get access to, you know, the best universities, the best experts engage in education globally. And the promise of that is fantastic, but the research shows that, you know, that a large percentage of the people, the major percentage of the people who are participating in those MOOCs are actually already highly educated.
They already have college degrees usually.
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, they've got the background, the motivation, the tools basically to be able to go out and take advantage of something like that. And so, you know, what's potentially happening here is, you know, you have automation and robotics and things like that coming along that are, you know, pushing out a lot of lower skilled workers. You have, you know, the sort of middle level workers potentially going into those cognitively less demanding jobs. So it's, you know, kind of a hollowing out of the middle that you hear about in the economy sort of happening relative to knowledge and education and job roles as well. And then you've got, you know, what's almost like the growth of a 1% in the learning realm, you know, the people who are the self-starters who are really going to capitalize on what's going on out there. So, you know, there's some very significant economic and social issues that are buried in all of this. And of course, you know, I think anytime you've got big challenges like that on a grand level, you're always looking for, okay, who's going to address this? You know, whose role is this? And, you know, we already talked about employers, and I mean, employers certainly have a role to play. And I think that, you know, that's going to have to be an ongoing discussion. You know, governments certainly have a role to play in this. And part of that role is going to be, you know, ensuring that the employers, you know, act the way that they need to about this, and that employees, and potentially displaced workers are indeed helped out with lifelong learning. But, you know, I mean, nobody listening to this podcast is going to be surprised, you know, who we see a big opportunity for, you know, what types of organizations have a big role to play here. And of course, it's trade and professional associations. It's just an obvious place for them to be having an impact.
And I think that was noteworthy to us in looking at the Economist special report. There is, I believe, one mention of trade unions.
Yeah, and unions. Yeah, not even, you know, your standard sort of trade and professional association. It's definitely the labor organizing organizations.
Yeah, and so for us, that's a key another, you know, player who needs to be at the table. You know, we definitely agree with the Economist thrust that this has to be, you know, a group effort. It can't just be the learners. It can't just be the employers. It can't just be government. You all have to come together. But yes, we think associations have to be part of that mix as well. And I think that it ties to that social, philosophical implications that we were just touching on. You know, if you think about, you know, the employer kind of has the corporation's best interests at heart, and that's what they're going to really be looking for in terms of training. So they're really going to be probably focused on that connection between learning and earning and learning and productivity,
right,
and those types of things. But I think, again, to, you know, given my bias and bent, you know, that learning is bigger than earning. And so I think that's a role where associations can help support that and help support the learners as they are pursuing not just, you know, a job, not just a paycheck, but also that kind of idea of, okay, self-fulfillment, kind of the legacy that you want to leave when you're done with your career, and really taking that broader picture and helping to support learners as they form that idea and then see it develop and play out over the course of their working life and even beyond their working life.
And we've made that point, you know, many times before. I mean, associations are so well positioned because, you know, your average worker, learner is going to stay with them for an extended period of time. I mean, they switch jobs, you know, frequently. Most people are switching jobs a dozen different times. They're switching careers some, but they're mostly staying in the same career. You know, higher education, you get your formal higher education, you know, maybe stay involved as an alum, but you're not necessarily looking to your institution of higher education to kind of go with you throughout your life, throughout your career. But associations are positioned to do that. We've always characterized this as the other 50 years. I mean, you finish your formal education in your 20s, and these days, you've got another 50 years, maybe more at this point in front of you, during which you're going to be earning. But as you say, too, you know, living your life. I mean, looking for, you know, how are you going to, you know, live a meaningful, satisfied, fulfilling life? And all throughout that, you know, a trade or professional association can be there with you. And, you know, we've said before that we think that there is this just incredibly important third sector of education. And this really is the sector of lifelong learning that is as important, if not more important, than, you know, the K through 12 and higher education sectors. And this really is the place where trade and professional associations can lead. So, you know, The Economist characterizes this as an economic imperative. I think we would characterize it as a life imperative. I mean, this is the core of living a good life, basically. And associations just have a great role to play here if they're going to step up. But again, as you mentioned, you know, they're pretty much missing in action in this article. They seem to be repeatedly missing in action in a lot of these types of reports and articles that come out. This is a place where leadership needs to step up, and associations need to have a very, very strong voice with what's happening with lifelong learning.
So we encourage you to check out the Economist piece, particularly to that point that Jeff just made, because you know, when learning shows up in the mainstream and when associations aren't mentioned, I mean, that's a big deal and something that needs to be dealt with. And so I don't think we should ignore the mainstream, you know, media any more than they should be ignoring sort of the association role in learning. So we need to, we recommend this reading to you so that you can be aware of kind of the perspective that's out there and being put forth.
That's right. So get the Economist report, get the Pew report that we'll link to as well. Get the free download of the first chapter of Leading the Learning Revolution, and you will be prepared to march forward into the mainstream of lifelong learning. And we're going to march forward now and exit this episode of the Leading Learning Podcast. But as we're doing that, we want to be sure to say thanks again to your membership for being the sponsor for this quarter of the Leading Learning Podcast. And you can find out more about your membership at yourmembership.com. And we do want to mention once again that registration is still open right now for Learning Technology Design, or LTD, which is our annual event specifically for professionals in the business of continuing education, professional development, and yes, lifelong learning. So if that happens to be who you are, we certainly hope you will join us. You can get all the details and register at ltd.leadinglearning.com.
To get show notes for this episode, go to leadinglearning.com/episode70. And while you're there, you will see options for subscribing to the podcast. And if you're getting value out of the podcast, out of what you hear, we'd be grateful if you would subscribe.
We'd also be grateful if you would take just a minute to give us a rating on iTunes. All you have to do is go to leadinglearning.com/iTunes, and that will get you to the right place. And we really do appreciate your doing that. It helps us know that you value the podcast, and it helps others to find the podcast.
And we hope you'll consider telling others about the podcast. You can send out a tweet by going to leadinglearning.com/share. Or if tweeting isn't your thing, you can pick a social network of your preference and spread the word that way.
So thanks again, and we'll see you next time on the Leading Learning Podcast.